Okay, good afternoon, everybody. So, the names list hasn't gone around yet, so pop the name list on the name on there. There's two names that's going around. One is for Francis, which is, you know, official one, and the other one is just for your name, for my name, for my purposes. And we're recording now, and we're up on Leo at the moment, and all your essays have been marked. And if you go into your essay box, you will find your essay with comments and your mark. But now I'm going to go through your essays. And I'm going to look at everybody's essay on the screen here without revealing the mark. And I want to draw attention to certain things in your essays that will help you improve with your next essay. That's the agenda for today. But I hope by the end of by the time we get to 3 o'clock, there'll be enough time to look at some more poems and also to introduce prose. And if I think it's necessary, if you think it's necessary, some of the comments that I'll make today generally, I can put together into a document and send it out to all of you. So you go into your essay box, and if your essay is in there, you will find it. So I'm going to leave Leo at the moment, and I'm going to go into my desktop where I've got all the essays hiding. And Thomas is not here at the moment, so I'll wait till he gets here if he's coming. Maung is not here at the moment, or is he? Not yet. So I'll wait till he comes. Ian is here. Ian is here. Now just let me, I just want to make sure that I don't reveal Ian's mark. And I'm pretty sure I had set this up properly, but I just want to double check.
Who did you want to know your mark?
Well, you'll have to look into, you have to
I
look.
Checked yesterday, wasn't it?
I'm usually five.
It's there, been there today. Today. So. So here is, the comment on Ian's essay. This is a really excellent essay, Ian. You write with passion and you express your experience of the poem very well. I enjoyed especially the way you were able to link the poem to your own personal experience. This is what literature is also all about, the way it helps to bring our own lives back into focus. Now, I've put red around those things I particularly wanted to talk about. Ian spoke about Galway Kinnell's poem, Blackberry Eating. And I'm going to look at this paragraph here. The reader, and when you get your essay, you see I've put their comments all down the left, right-hand side, but you won't see those comments unless you click View Comments. Otherwise, it'll just be, there'll be nothing there. But there are comments on everybody's essay. So the reader shares this joy, this is Ian. The reader shares this joyful and powerful description through the poet's effective choice of language. For example, the reader gets a clear image of the luscious fruit when we read the description, fat, overripe, icy black blackberries. The poet uses alliteration quite frequently in his technique, and we find repetition with words beginning with the consonant B. For example, the word black occurs all along with breakfast and berries. Also in line 4, the consonant P is used in the words prickly and penalty. Now, in the comment over here, which you can't really read, let me see if I can make it a bit bigger. Maybe that's a bit better. Comment over here says, good observation. Could you say more about the way these repeated sounds bring the experiences vividly to life? Now, this is a comment that I make on everybody's essay at various points, and it's one of the things in literature that I try and teach, is when you observe a literary or a poetic effect, like alliteration, like assonance, like rhyme, it's one thing to observe the effect, it's the other thing to try and say as clearly and as powerfully as you can how that effect helps the meaning, or helps the feeling, or helps the experience. That's where the power of it lies. Now, Ian has said up here, talks about, gets a clear image of the luscious fruit when we read the description, fat, overripe, icy black blackberries. But when he's talking about the sounds, prickly berries, penalty, then the p-p-p, one could say that the use of repetition of consonants there, they create something of the impact of the eating of the berries themselves, something along those lines, rather than just mentioning that there are lots of bees there. He then goes on and says, yet the most effective use of alliteration is in the volta. Ian was obviously listening very carefully to the discussion of this poem, which is a sonnet. And as I was saying, the sonnet is made up of 8 lines and then 6 lines, and it has a break in the middle, and that break is a volta. And usually there's a turn where the poet begins to reflect on what is described in the first part, and that's exactly what happens in this poem. The most effective use of alliteration is in the volta, where he cleverly combines it, alliteration, with onomatopoeia. His use of language is descriptive, strong, and full of alliteration with the consonant S when he writes about his use of many-lettered, one-syllabled lumps, which I squeeze, squinch open, and splurge well in the silent, startled, icy black language of blackberry-eating in late September. The reader can feel and hear the blackberries being savoured on the tongue and in the mouth when the poet uses words squeeze, squinch, and splurge. This technique is onomatopoeia. Very good. Perfect. Very well described. So that's all I wanted to show from Ian's essay, but it was a very well-written essay.
Can we get a copy of that?
Well, that's a question. We could make, if you're all happy to see each other's essays, we could do that. We could certainly work on it. But we'd have to decide at the end of today, do we want to share each other's copies? So let's ask that question again at 3 o'clock when we've gone through everybody's.
Bring one and give it to somebody.
I'm really impressed by what he wrote, and I just want to.
It's very impressive. Very good. So great, Ian. Very good. So let's go back now.
We can all
learn from each other, both positive and negative. So Nicholas is not here, but Jean is here. So let's go and have a look. These are not in any order, by the way. These are not in numerical order as to best, worst, etc., etc. So they're just in accordance with things I wanted to point out. So here's a concluding comment to Jean's essay. Jean, this is a good essay that shows a clear understanding of the poem and of the stages that it is describing. Mong! Hello, welcome.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Put your name on the top of this list because you are at the top of the... Okay. This shows a clear understanding of the poem and of the stages that it is describing. Your essay is well structured, but you should avoid single sentence paragraphs. Now, this is something I've said to a lot of people, and so I'm not singling you out, Jean. Many of us read newspapers like the Daily Telegraph, MX, and newspapers, by default, use single-sentence paragraphs. Because they want quick, easy digestion, you know, quick idea, quick grab, etc. But when you're writing an academic essay, you have to think in terms of developing an idea and developing, you know, an idea that goes maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 sentences. And the paragraph, the paragraph, where's my pens gone to? There they are. A paragraph should always begin, paragraph begins with a topic sentence. Probably some of you have heard of this. A topic sentence. And a topic sentence is what it is, what it means. What is the topic of this paragraph? The topic. This paragraph has got a topic. Like, for instance, the use of sound in Galway Kinnell's blackberries. The next paragraph, I will now discuss the meaning. So, paragraphs are one complete idea that's developed and has a topic sentence at the beginning. And, you know, in an essay of this length, I would imagine that you might have three or four paragraphs of probably about equal length. And as you'll see in your essays, when you look at them online, I've often put in a link there for you to go and explore more information about how to construct a paragraph. There are lots of useful resources out there. The resource that I often put people onto is a university in America called Purdue University. And they've got an absolutely fantastic site for English expression, punctuation, sentences, everything. I haven't been able to go past that. So you'll get a link. Please follow the link up. So what else do I say? You should avoid single-sentence paragraphs. Try to allow your ideas to grow more fully into a paragraph before changing course. I felt that you could have quoted more frequently from the poem to give focus and flow to your argument. That's another comment I've made on a lot of people's essays. When you're writing about poetry or prose, don't be afraid to put in three or four lines of the poem or half a paragraph of prose. Yes, Michael?
We had restraints of 300 words. I really struggled with that to get across everything.
That's a very good...
300 words. Did everyone manage to do
that? Hello, yes. Are you a new student or no? Just has got his glasses on and his hat on.
That's right. I'll go and wash my face every day.
Okay. So
I didn't want to be wasting words.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That is my fault. That is my fault. I should have told you beforehand, you don't count quoted words. You don't count quoted words. Now, that's my rule. I should have told you that before. Anyway, for next time, for your next essay.
Yeah.
There is a danger that you quote too much.
Because I assume that whoever's marking would have read the poem. And
you can assume that. But in terms of how you work best writing about a poem, if you've got a quote there, it forces you to focus on the particular words.
Emphasis.
And it helps you to narrow your attention. So I always tell my students, quote as needed, but don't quote unnecessarily. I mean, if you're going to write about the first sentence of a paragraph, but you put the whole paragraph there, that's a bit of a waste. So where's the names list here? If you could, Scott, could you pass that around? And I'm sorry, I forget your name.
Nicholas.
Nicholas, that's right. So put your name next to Scott's on the list there, Nicholas, please. So let's have a look at other comments that I made on Jean. I made this comment here. Okay. I see each of the verses as different stages of human growth, from the impunity of youth to the reminiscing of old age. Now, the comment here, I don't know if you can read it, it's comment number 3. Can you read comment number 3?
No.
No, I'll make it a bit larger. This is another very frequent difficulty, how to use semicolons, commas, colons, etc. And you can see at the bottom here, I've actually put a link here for Jean to look at with regard to semicolons. But in a sentence like this here, I see each of the verses as different stages of human growth, semicolon. It should be just a comma. And what I say here is use a simple comma. Semicolon is not appropriate. It is usually a replacement for full stop when two sentences are closely linked in meaning. So it's a bit like putting a brick in the middle of a sentence and shouldn't replace the more mild comma. So that's just a technical detail, but it's worth picking these things up. And down at the bottom here, I just make this comment that she has at the bottom, and this links in with what I was saying to Ian. She finishes her essay by a very good list of the poetic devices. The use of colour, yellow in the first verse, black in the third verse. The description of undergrowth emphasises youth with the unknown. The repetition of rhymes, two words diverged in wood. So I say here, thanks Nicholas, It is good to integrate these observations on poetic devices into the body of your essay. It is important to say how such devices actually help to create and intensify the meaning and effect of the poem at certain points. So that's again re-emphasizing this fact that observe the literary effects, the poetic effects, but show how they help the meaning or the feeling to come through. Okay? And, okay, that's all for that. So now we can go to, I think we can step back a bit and we can have a look at Mung's and Nicholas's. We've got Mung here. So Mung, concluding comment. Mung, this is a powerful first essay. All these, by the way, these essays are up in Leo. You can get them from there and look at the comments and look at your markup in Leo. So you go into the where you put your assignment, into the assignment box, click on there, and you'll find the essay that you uploaded, but you'll also find my copy with comments there.
Okay?
And I'm just sharing some of the comments I made on people's essay because I think it helps everybody.
Okay, yes. The feedback.
Feedback, yeah. Mung, this is a powerful first essay that shows a real appreciation of the way poetry works and how poetic language can create such vivid effects. I like the way you link the experience of reading the poem to your own experiences. This brought some real life to your writing. There are areas in your essay where you could have pushed your ideas a little further, especially towards the end where you needed to make a stronger link between the blackberry eating and the writing of poetry. So let's go through a few of these areas here. Just this last point. Make this a bit smaller. Mung had this rather wonderful idea about eating the blackberries. He says here, as I read the poem, I could imagine picking and wrapping the blackberries into the bag, and I could imagine feeling that it was so painful and an astonishing penalty. I suffered and my skin totally swelled because of the stalks, which are full of thorns, stung my skin, and a lot of poisonous black ants bit me. Very formidable black ants flourished around the bush, as overripe blackberries were very delicious and sweet to the ants. I could almost taste, smell, and feel like I was eating the ripe black blackberries with enthusiasm. So Mung has allowed his imagination to go a little bit overboard there, I would say. I mean, he's begun to write his own poem there about the ants biting him like that. I mean, it's very good. How did he get into 300 words? Well, he did. So you go and talk to Mung. I say here, in the last paragraph, you've written, the poet uses the words squeezed, squinched, and splurged to good effect, describing the eating of blackberries as something very strange and powerful. Now, what do I say about that? I say, down here, good, but you could say here how his use of these particular words, squinched, strengthened, and splurged, draws attention to their sounds, and in so doing imitates the sounds of eating blackberries and enjoying the fruits of poetry. So take it a bit further than just talking about the strong attributes, and actually try and build some idea of how the sounds of those words are really adding to our sense of what eating blackberries are like, but also what writing poetry is like. So I'm asking you to tie together your comment about the techniques with the meaning of the poem. That's what I'm trying to push towards. Good. So we go next to, I think we go next to Nicholas. So Nicholas had his did an essay on the wattle tree and reduced the size of this a bit. So my concluding comment on your essay, Nicholas, and again, this is for the purpose of everybody. We're all helping each other here. Nicholas, there are some powerful ideas in your essay, and I believe you have... I'll make it a bit bigger. I believe you have understood the core idea, namely the life and power that Judith Wright sees in the golden wattle tree. Well done. However, there is also the side of the poem that presents the poet trying to make sense of this, Oh, that I knew that word, and I had no voice to speak. These references seem to bring the poet's voice into a kind of dialogue with the wattle tree. Also, in terms of the structure of your essay, and this comes back now to paragraphing, it's important to try to work out what the three or four main points of your argument are, and then structure your paragraphs around those points. Each paragraph beginning with a topic sentence. Each paragraph could also contain a substantial quote from the poem itself. This would help your essay to have a sharper focus. For example, the wattle tree as personification, you could quote the first two stanzas. The wattle tree as coming to life on the page, quote stanza three, because you spoke very well about the way that that stanza kind of brought the movement of the tree onto the page. Thirdly, the wattle tree as a symbol for what the poet herself is looking for, and then perhaps quote the fourth stanza. So, I mean, your essay had lots of good ideas in it, and if we go back and have a look at a couple of them, you say here, in the third stanza, I feel as though the wattle is beginning to develop both in physical form and is also starting to find the voice which it cries for. Well, I say here, this is good, this stanza really does seem to bring the wattle tree's voice to life. It would be good to say how the shape of the stanza makes this happen. So your phrase, the physical form, is perfect, but link this to the physical form of the stanza itself. Okay? And just notice that in your essay, you came in a bit late, but I was saying at the start that many of you, like you've done here, are writing single-sentence paragraphs. Now, a paragraph is different to a sentence. A sentence is a part of a thought unit that fits into a paragraph which maybe has three or four or five sentences that develop one thought.
Or one topic.
We are all habituated to thinking in short paragraphs because of newspapers. Newspapers write short paragraphs, bang, 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 bang. People standing up on trains, they've got to read information quickly. But when you're writing an academic essay, try and think a bit bigger. Think of three or four sentences for a paragraph, and think of a topic sentence at the start of a paragraph. You know, what's the topic of this one? So that's why I've given you suggestions at the bottom there for topics you could think about. Now what have I written here? In the third stanza, there's a change in the shape of the poem which indicates a change in the flow and also meaning. So the comment I've made here is, excellent, this idea belongs with your second paragraph, where you were talking about the shape and the form. Overall, you need to work on paragraphing, as most of you do. Try to keep key ideas together and build longer paragraphs, each with its own topic sentence. See the following resource and see whether your own paragraphs match up to this. So if I click on there, that will take me to a whole section on writing paragraphs. So if you follow up these links religiously, then that will definitely help your writing improve. Okay. Good. So let's move on to Jean. Joey. Joey, our resident philosopher. Let's go and have a look at the concluding comment here. Joey, this is a fabulous essay which shows a good understanding of the underlying issues in Judith Wright's poem. However, you need to talk more simply about the poem's purpose and effect. Now, I often say this, particularly to first-year students at uni. They come in and they want to use all these words about philosophy and stuff, and they think they've got to write very grandly. And I try and help people to come back to talking more simply about the text on the page. So that can help you. As you know, you talk a lot about Greek philosophy at the start. I'm not going to show people that first paragraph. There's some good stuff in there. It's good to focus more tightly on the text itself. I've given a couple of examples in a minute to show you what I mean. Let the poem speak more for itself without overlaying too much philosophy and history onto it. Now that might be a bit difficult to understand at what I'm getting at. Let the poem speak for itself.
Place it on its own merits.
Yeah, and let its ideas come through without necessarily wanting to kind of say that the whole universe is embedded in the poem. it's a very difficult concept to get through. I just got to keep hitting students and tell them, look at the text itself. These ideas are good, but are they really there in the poem? Something like that. I'm sure many of the connections you have suggested are there in Judith Wright's mind, but there's also the immediate experience of her seeing the wattle tree and trying to write about it. I found your last paragraph the best of all because here you were getting down closer to the language of the poem itself. And here's your last paragraph. A fourth theme is Wright's own creativity, the artistic process inspired by nature, which helps her to write the poem through apt use of poetic devices. One of these is the personification of the tree, which is demonstrated by where the tree dreams it has a voice, incorporating a human attribute to dream, and also that the tree knows four truths, a human capacity to know. Now, what have I comment have I put on there? Okay, this is the same comment that... and what is this comment here? There's two things here. Just this one here, which is the same as comment on Jean's. You're using semicolons here instead of commas, and sometimes it's better to start a new sentence, but a semicolon is actually like a break in the sentence, and there's a completely new thought after it. Yes, Michael?
Yeah, he used it twice. Can you do that?
Well, a semicolon can be used twice in a sentence if you begin with a colon and give a list of things. Semicolons can divide lists of discrete things, but normally...
Just looking at it visually, it doesn't look right.
Yeah, well, it's difficult to judge visually. It's a question of what impact it has on the meaning, how it divides the meaning, whether the meaning is closely related or whether it's a new idea.
Yep. Followed by this.
That's right, yeah.
And then a second use, which is to break the sentence and make a completely new clause.
Correct.
Because you've already got three or four commas.
Correct.
There.
That's it.
If
exactly.
You don't have comma, you don't really have to worry about it at all.
That's right. Good. Thank you. That's perfect. And then at the end here. You say two distinct metaphors used are word of gold for the flowers and now I bud where the poetic alchemy occurs. And I say at the end, so this last sentence needs some conclusion. What do the metaphors of I bud and word of gold tell us about Judith Wright's experience of herself as a poet? What is she telling us about what she feels she has achieved? Maybe a breakthrough, a rebirth, a consolidation. So I just felt that in the last paragraph, you needed to kind of bring your ideas more into a conclusion, bringing those ideas together.
Can I?
Yep.
In that last question, right?
Yep.
In that last sentence, would you say a word was missing?
Two distinct metaphors used are word of gold for the flowers, and now I bud where the poetic alchemy occurs.
But it's going to tell us something about it, and that something is missing, which is what you're saying is something different.
Yeah, something is missing. Yeah, it's not a complete thought there.
Yeah.
Something is a bit lost there. Okay, so
he's
let's.
Very good at that.
Very good.
You don't mean that.
Yeah.
Oh. So now we're going to go to Scott. Concluding comment. This is Scott round here. This is a really excellent essay, Scott. You express yourself well and get to the heart of this poem's meaning. As you can see above, my main suggestion for improvement is in the area of sentence structure. I also feel that you could quote more liberally from the poem itself as a support to your observations. This would help to give more focus and flow to your observations. So let's have a little look at where I picked out something in the sentence structure. So if we begin looking at his opening paragraph, do you all know this poem, Finished by Kate Llewellyn? Has anybody not read that poem? Okay, let me read it because it's worth just having that in mind while we look at what Scott's had to say. It's a short poem, on page 5. Finished. There'll be no more lying on your shoulder, love, or listening for your car. There'll be no more drinking on the veranda, love, or eating roasted veal. There'll be no more my legs round your neck, love, and howling at the moon. There'll be no more hits across the mouth, love, and crawling on the floor. There'll be no more smoking, listening to you curse, love, or smiling, drinking more. There'll be no more crying because you rage, love, or dancing up your drive. There's no more love, love. So, finished. The poem Finished by Kate Llewellyn is, I believe, a manifestation of a previous relationship this poet had, which over time became extremely repetitious and stagnant, like nothing new was going to occur between herself and her partner in the near future. Most of my comments here are just correcting minor details in your sentences. The first sentence of this poem, "There'll be no more," which the poet continues to use to begin each stanza throughout the poem, and although it sounds simple but structurally works perfectly and with great effect by keeping me intrigued and wanting to know what will follow and how and where this poem will eventually end, this demonstrates the experience and skill this poet is using the right words and symbols like roast veal, as well as a consistent rhythm to express the actual events she experienced while in this relationship over time. Now let me just take this first comment here. I say, excellent. You have seen and felt the way that repetition can be such a driving and emotional effect in a poem. There'll be no, there'll be no, there'll be no. But this long sentence could be broken into two. Remember that long sentence there that goes all the way from the first sentence of the poem right the way to end, and then it doesn't even seem to end quite there because this demonstrates. So the most important point I want to make here is that long sentence could be broken into two. This would get your ideas across more clearly and help your reader too. The first sentence of this, so I'm now writing it as I thought it might be. The first sentence of this poem is "There'll be no more," which the poet continues to use to begin each stanza throughout the poem, full stop. Although it sounds simple, structurally it works perfectly with great effect, full stop. This keeps me intrigued, wanting to know what will follow and how and where this poem will eventually end. So the message I'm trying to get here, short sentences, simple sentences, don't be afraid of the full stops, separate your ideas out, then you can be much more confident that your sentence is grammatically correct. It's one thought, completes itself. When you write such long sentences, you get really lost as to whether the sentence has completed itself or not.
Wow.
And in this is Scott.
It's very similar to what I wrote.
Yep. So there's something to be learned there about short and simple sentences. And that's probably all I need to say there. But overall, a very, very good essay on a poem that we hadn't actually discussed in class. So that's really good. Now we come to, is Greg here? Where's Greg? Oh, Greg in the front here, yeah. Greg. So Greg did "My Mistress' Eyes Are Nothing Like the Sun." Greg, this is a good essay. You have understood clearly the key concepts and you write about them clearly. However, the key points in your argument could be brought out more strongly, and you could, for example, decide to develop 4 separate paragraphs, each with a clear topic sentence, and then build your essay around these ideas. For example, background, description of the mistress, the real difference between his mistress and all other women, and then conclusion. That's just one possible breakdown of the ideas in the essay. So if we go through and have a look at some of the parts of the essay here. So you begin, William Shakespeare's "My Mistress' Eyes Are Nothing Like the Sun" is a 14-line love sonnet written in 1609. Well, fair enough, that's a sort of an introduction to what the sonnet is about. But you could extend this introduction a little bit. In fact, you could probably have this second paragraph linked in, because this is still an introduction to what the poem in general is about.
I thought of putting it just after the 1689.
Yeah, I think that would probably have worked quite well. So the theme of the poem revolves around love and romance. He is seeing his mistress as a real person and not a celebrity or a made-up character on a stage. His description of his mistress, while harsh, symbolizes his true desire for a real woman, well expressed. An example of this is that he would rather hear music than her coarse accent. Coarse actually is spelled C-O-A-R-S-E. That sort of coarse is what you're doing at the moment. Okay. I just noticed that now. I didn't notice it when I was marking it. But her voice is part of her appeal. Her hair is like a razor wire. She smells like she's not bathed in 4 days, and her breath is like a winter's morning. Shakespeare's analogy, if snow be white, why then her breasts are dun, adds to the passion and appeal of the poem. Now, what comment have I made there about those? First of all, this is a comment I make quite often, a winter's morning needs an apostrophe S, because apostrophe S equals belonging. In most cases, the morning belongs to winter. So where you have ownership, then you and if you click on this link here, it goes through all that. And there's some examples here which you probably can't read. I'll just make it a little bit bigger. So if there's a meaning of ownership, for instance, the boy's apple, if it's singular, apostrophe before the S. And if it's plural, apostrophe, the after the S. Yes, Derek?
Well, I actually agree. I mean, I'm not...
That's unusual for you, Derek, but please continue. Please continue.
The winter or the tree, for example, does not have the power to own anything. Therefore, winter is in trees.
Yeah. So there's a difference between grammatical rules and meanings.
Well, I mean, we're writing English, we're not writing literary, right? So the meaning is coming through in the words. So it has to be animate in order to want.
That's right.
I mean, Judith writes all that do horrible things and give, you know, human attributes to dogs and trees and stuff like that. And that's a very modern thing. But the idea is that you have to be human in order to want something.
It's a bit like the rule in German and in English that why do we call a ship a she? You know, grammar, in a sense, often flies in the face of meaning. Grammar and meaning are not necessarily always integrated. But possession is normally with an apostrophe.
It was more of a joke saying the winter's morning is bad and so is her breath. That's what I was sort of...
Right, that's right. So I'm not complaining about your meaning because I got your meaning, but just grammatically it needed an apostrophe S. Now I tell my students sometimes who come in, they've done their HSC, they've got no idea about where to use apostrophes. Some essays have got no apostrophes at all, and other essays, wherever anybody has an S, apostrophe, 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 apostrophe. They bash every S with an apostrophe. And the one place you don't use apostrophes is with plurals. With plurals, plurals, simple plurals, not ownership plurals. Like, the houses are red. Plural, the houses are red. But if you say the houses roofs, then it has an apostrophe. And of course, then there are all these other things that make English such a terrifying, complex language. For instance, you say one's house, if you're talking about somebody's house, but you say about your pet, you say, and you don't really, you might refer to your dog's pet, but my dog is sexless, and I say quite often, it's food. Have you put its food out yet? And the temptation is to put an apostrophe there because everything else has an apostrophe when it's ownership. But if you put an apostrophe there, it becomes wrong. It does. It proves your point. Because it apostrophe equals it is. because sometimes the apostrophe replaces a missing letter, as in, for example, don't. So apostrophes have got uses both creating ownership, but they also replace missing letters.
Yep.
So it's a bit confusing. Yes, Derek?
I mean, it proves my point in that the dog is an it, it is not a he or she.
Yep.
And therefore it does not have the power to own something, and therefore the apostrophe is wrong. So the previous point there, which is the tree belonging on the winter's day,
yep.
Which is saying, the winter doesn't have the power either to own something. So there's no apostrophe.
So logically, you're correct, but grammatically, forget it. Forget it, grammatically. So we want a book called The World According to Derek, which pushes all grammar out the window because it's irrelevant to meaning. That's it.
The idiom,
yeah. So the last comment I make here on Greg's essay, Shakespeare's analogy, if snow be white, why then her breasts are done, adds to the passion and appeal of the poem. Now that's a good observation, but I say here, can you say...
I don't think that's it.
You think there's more there?
I think so.
You thought there was more there?
Yeah, because the breasts are done, she's black. Well, not black, she's dark.
That's
she's
right.
White.
That's right. So I say, can you say what the word done implies here?
Beige.
Yeah, I think I put it in the other one. I don't know if that's the right one.
You think you might have, I might have the wrong essay.
I don't know.
You'd have to have a look. This is the one that you submitted.
Yeah, I have.
Okay. Anyway, let's move on. Let's move to Chris. Chris is here now.
Yes.
He's hiding behind the pole. Yeah, Chris. Okay. Concluding comment. Chris, this is a very good short essay. However, paragraphing is a problem, as is the overall structure of the piece. I suggest dividing your essay into maybe four paragraphs, each with a topic sentence, introducing a new stage of your content. More frequent quotation from the text to support your argument will also help the flow and focus of your ideas. That was a very good essay in terms of its insights and its content, but as you can see from the opening section, it gets better in the second half. In the opening section, it's a series of short thoughts. And this just picks up my comment that we need to tie our thoughts together to make more cohesive paragraphs. And if I can just make a couple of other, point out another couple of observations here about Chris's essay, because I know that Chris's soul is strong and he won't mind pointing things out. So the essay is a very strong essay. Begins, this poem's topic revolves around the seasonal changes in a wattle tree and how this matches Judith Wright's personal journey and quest for immortality. I see the main themes as including the physical, emotional and spiritual elements that combine to show the stages of natural and human growth and renewal. I think these first three paragraphs actually are all part of the one paragraph. You're talking generally about the overall themes, her describing the wattle tree, and then you move in to the first word, first line, and the first stanza. So I think you could probably join those three sentences up for one paragraph, and these three also, making sure you get a good topic sentence at the start of each. Let's move on. We've got 10 minutes before our break. So we've got Michael. Okay. So, Michael, this is an excellent essay, Michael, clear in its message and for the most very well written. I felt that the focus and flow of your argument could have been improved by more frequent quotation. We've talked about that from the poem as a way of supporting your observations. Very good work. And in the essay, I picked out one thing here. You talk about... Reading this poem invoked a sense of resentment, disappointment, and regret. And you were talking about the girl in the park. I think many people haven't read this poem, so let's read it. It's a beautiful poem. I think you chose a very powerful little piece here. It's on page 13. The Girl in the Park by Jack Davis, an Aboriginal, Australian Aboriginal author. And Michael's opening paragraph really captures well what this poem's about. He says here, "The Girl in the Park is a poem about missed opportunities. It was a tragedy full of remorse, and it left a hollow, empty feeling within me. It describes an event that could have been a defining point in a person's life, though never realized what could have been. The Girl in the Park. I had seen her walking in the park before today. I watched her gazing at reflections in the pool, sad, alone. Although she smiled a tiny smile, I was not bold or brave enough to speak to her. Then the chance had slipped away. As stars that pass, blink out and vanish, she was gone. Next day she did not come, nor in the days to follow. Yet I know she was my lonely kind. So she remains one more regret in the caverns of my mind." It's a rather beautiful poem. And in this second paragraph, just to reiterate, reading this poem invoked a sense of resentment, disappointment, and regret. I felt the author's pain, sorrow, and torment in and through his words. So the question then comes up. The question comes up. When to create a new paragraph. In general, in academic essays, avoid single-sentence paragraphs. Allow the idea to grow and develop until there is clear time for a new topic sentence and a new paragraph. See, it's sometimes very hard to tell. You write an essay, you brainstorm your ideas, you've got all these ideas down. It's very hard sometimes to work out where the ideas are. What's the shape of this essay? Because if you read any professional essay or book, there's always paragraphs that separate the ideas. So it's a real, it's a sort of an intellectual challenge working out where the paragraphs go. And that's why sometimes people do a plan of an essay. It might seem a bit absurd to do a plan for a 300-word essay. If you do a bit of a plan, that can maybe help you work out where the paragraphs go. So we've got a couple more to go, two more to go. Tibby, is Tibby here?
Yeah.
Tibby is here, right next to me.
Hiding.
Okay. So, Tibby, concluding comment. Tibby, there are many powerful ideas in this essay, but as I have indicated, they need a little trimming and simplifying. I think you and Joey are on the same wavelength. You're both highly philosophical minds. And the overlays in the poem need to be somehow drawn apart a bit. The next sentence I've written has got a typo in it, so when you read it, make the correction. I've said word through the comments carefully. I mean work through the comments carefully. I felt in particular that in your last paragraph, you needed to bring all your ideas together as a conclusion to your thoughts. This is the place where you can really find a simple, direct way to say what was most important about this poem. So let's have a look at one key paragraph here in the middle of your essay. You also wrote about blackberry eating. So if we look at this first paragraph, "Blackberry Eating by Galway Kinnell is about passion. Through a two-stage process, he will share his passion for poesy." Now, I thought that was a fantastic opening sentence. Because it really, it is about passion. It's not about blackberries. It's not about poetry. It's his passion for poesy. And in this case, his poesy, which is the writing of poetry, is actually writing about blackberries. So it's this wonderful poem that's kind of about blackberries, but also about writing poetry. And the blackberries become a metaphor for the black words on the page that are the poem, which is the sonnet full of all the black dots. I think it's fantastic. Now, Tibby has got this complex, very rich paragraph, but let's see if we can help him how to kind of make this paragraph more accessible. "The reader once emerged, while moved by his body senses, Kinnell then suddenly zoom out of the blackberry eating description in order to actually capture the imminent emotional state he, the author, is going through as he writes the poem by referring this time to some meta-language descriptions, colon, as words sometimes do, many-lettered, one-syllable lumps, full stop." Whoa, what a sentence. So come back to our shorter sentences, break it up into the into units so we know exactly what's coming. What is my comment here? Let me see. I've actually tried to rewrite the sentence for you, the first part. Let's have a look what I wrote. Okay. Good, but this last paragraph could be written more simply with shorter sentences. This would make your ideas more powerful and easier to follow. For example, the reader, after being immersed, I think it was immersed, not emerged. You can talk about merged. You merge with something. Emerge is to come out of something. So immerse, I think, is to be brought into something. The reader, after being immersed in the physical experience of eating blackberries, is then suddenly, in the ninth line, faced with another meaning. Full stop. Okay? Blackberry eating is like writing poetry. Full stop. Blackberries become the way into a meta-language for poetry writing, colon, as words sometimes do. I mean, you've got beautiful ideas, but they're sort of like this. They're like chains. You know, you've got to unchain them. So that's really good. I'm glad you wrote that sentence because it helps us all to see what's necessary. So I think the last one now, we've just done this nicely, we've got 4 minutes to afternoon tea. I put Derek last, not because he's the last, not because he's the last at all. But Derek has got a beautiful essay on Judith Wright, and Derek and I have had some very heated debates about this poem. We won't go into details. But my comment is, Derek, this is an outstanding essay, even if I don't agree ultimately with your conclusions on the nature of Wright's belief. You write well with passion and insight. Paragraphing and punctuation are areas that need, I've made a typo there, look, areas that need, areas is plural, need is singular, needs. So it should be areas that need some attention. Follow up my suggested links. So what have I picked out here? Let's have a look. The subject of the poem is the author's longing for immortality. Yes, well, that's a nice opening statement. But again, I would sort of question a single word, single sentence paragraph at the opening of an essay. I'd build it out somewhat more. The first of three themes in the poem is regeneration, summed up as the word she would cry if she knew it. Second, the realization of the goal, colon, the tree in full bloom from the seed. Third, the amazing forces of nature, the four elements welded together that produce the goal, which she proposes is immortality. Okay, now a few things come up here. You'll notice that he's used double inverted commas around here and single inverted commas around here. Now, inverted commas are always the bane of a writer's life. Mine too. When do I use singles? When do I use doubles? The simple rule of thumb is you've got to be consistent. Now, in America and increasingly in Australia, double inverted commas are the ones that you use. But if ever you use inverted commas inside doubles, they become single. So use doubles all the time. That's my advice. Yes, Michael?
I normally use double if I'm quoting someone else.
Yep.
If I'm quoting myself, I use single.
There's not, well, that's your rule. But no one really can follow that. Now, some people use inverted commas even when they're not quoting somebody, but they want to say that this word is, I don't really mean this word, I didn't really mean this, or it's ironic, or, and that's a dangerous thing to do. It's best not to put inverted commas around anything that's not a quote. It's always important to put it around anything that is a quote. So that's one thing there. I've say, yep, you can. Nothing is wrong, but it's gone.
So I'm using double inverted commas when I use a quotation.
Yep.
And using single quotes.
Yep.
When I'm using a, I'm basically referring to an idea.
Yeah.
I'm giving it her name, but I don't think that's immortality. I mean, it's bullshit, right? So she's giving immortality to the tree. So I'm taking that word, as in her concept, and I'm using it, but I'm showing that it's not proper.
Well, there's a whole lot of assumptions about your meaning for that word with those two inverted commas, and people just don't get it. There's too much there. So it probably needs expansion, but I wouldn't put inverted commas around it anyway, in that instance. And, you know, there are some, I think maybe even here, have I referred you across to...
Well, when I use the word immortality to mean immortality,
What I've said about that sentence here, which he proposes is immortality, that is...
That's her use.
It's, well, more importantly, it's not a sentence. It's a sentence fragment. Which she proposes is immortality is actually a sentence fragment that is part of the preceding sentence and is not a complete sentence on its own.
Just a phrase.
And it's part of the preceding sentence. So that's just a minor issue. And you say here that through that vehicle she herself is enabled and express herself and herself created immortality. Which vehicle? Not clear. Also avoid single sentence paragraphs. Okay, that's enough. It's time for coffee, and then we're going to come back and have some real literature again. Thank you all for your attention. And we can decide after the coffee break whether you want each other's essays or not.